one of the senior doctors wrote what's called the Ramadan Protocol, teaching about how to administer medicine in a way that doesn't break the fast. There was one Friday afternoon, it happened that there were these three Orthodox Jewish doctors who had spent time in Yeshivot learning Talmud, and we were poring over these protocols, over-analyzing and reading into it like only a bunch of Talmud students turned doctors can.
Welcome to the Imagine Israel podcast, brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington. Imagine Israel is the initiative of the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington, connecting Washingtonians to Israel and Israelis through the lens of social change. With every Imagine Israel podcast, we get to meet innovative Israeli influencers and changemakers, people addressing social and economic challenges in Israel. We'll hear from people whose lives and whose work intersect as they address issues in Israeli society. And I'm your host, Robbie Grindgrass, and I'm coming to you from Makom, the Israel Education Lab of the Jewish Agency for Israel. On June 7th, 1967, Moshe Dayan, the then defense minister, announced to the world, "This morning, the Israel Defense Forces liberated Jerusalem. We have united Jerusalem, the divided capital of Israel. We have returned to the holiest of our holy places, never to part from it again. To our Arab neighbors, we extend also at this hour, and with added emphasis at this hour, our hand in peace. And to our Christian and Muslim fellow citizens, we solemnly promise full religious freedom and rights. We did not come to Jerusalem for the sake of other people's holy places, and not to interfere with the adherence of other faiths, but in order to safeguard its entirety, and to live here together with others in unity." Now that was 50 years ago, and the ongoing themes of uniting division, the desire for Jews, Christians, and Muslims to live together, resonate and rumble to this day. So for this episode, to mark Yom Yerushalayim, the 50th Jerusalem Day, we're going to speak with a few people who represent the unity and the division of our capital city, bringing change through medicine at Jerusalem's emergency clinics. Now, in your capital city, in Washington, D.C., there are about 7 hospitals with emergency wards, serving a population of around 672,000 people. 7 hospitals, 672,000, according to Wikipedia. Jerusalem is actually larger in terms of population, with over 800,000 residents, and has only 5 hospitals with emergency care, which is why we're dedicating this episode to the blessed memory of Rabbi Dr. David Applebaum, an American who made Aliyah, came to live in Israel, and became the pioneer of Israeli emergency medicine. So to start with, I popped over to Sha'arei Tzedek Hospital, near Mount Herzl, about 20 minutes' drive from Machane Yehuda, to speak with an old friend and colleague of David Applebaum. Todd Zalut is the current head of emergency medicine at Sha'arei Tzedek Hospital. In between fielding calls with patients and doctors alike, with superhuman patients, Todd begins to set the scene of this astounding gathering of medical changemakers. So Todd Zalut, we're here at Sha'arei Tzedek Hospital, but you seem to speak with a somewhat non-Israeli accent. How does that come about?
Well, I'm originally American.
That would do it.
I finished my training and my schooling, and then I decided that it was time to do a whirlwind trip. And I thought, well, how would I plan this trip around the world? And I thought that I would start in Jerusalem. And I came to Jerusalem.
As all things do start in Jerusalem.
And also stop in Jerusalem because I'm still here. And my whirlwind trip never happened. And I'm here in Jerusalem, the holy city, the capital of the state of Israel.
And where do you originate from?
That's actually a difficult question. I was born in Philadelphia in America. I grew up in Phoenix, Arizona. But I came to Israel, I made Aliyah from Chicago, where I trained in emergency medicine.
Is it different doing emergency medicine here?
Emergency medicine in Israel is a new specialty. It was recognized as a specialty only in 1999.
Wow.
Our first set of residents...
Because before then there were no emergencies in Israel.
Right. Well, we don't know what we did before that. Actually, we do, and we're not very proud of it. But in 1999, the state of Israel recognized emergency medicine as a specialty in medicine, like internal medicine, pediatric surgery. Mm-hmm. The first set of residents in a straight path doing their internship and going straight into emergency medicine only started in 2011. So it's all very new. We're building very much from scratch the whole field of emergency medicine.
It's amazing thinking about, I mean, if you're saying 2004, that was after the wave of suicide bombings in the Second Intifada, around about 2001-2, after a whole wave of bomb attacks and so on, only after then emergency medicine began to be taken, I guess, officially seriously.
Correct. Correct. I first came to Israel in 1990, and I worked for 2 months at Shaarei Tzedek. And I remember very clearly that there were problems in the whole approach in the emergency department because there was no concept of emergency medicine.
And is that where Terem came in?
Terem was actually founded by a doctor who used to work at Shaarei Tzedek. His name was Dr. Applebaum. And he was so frustrated with the bureaucracy of the system that he said, I can do this better. And so he opened...
Let me guess, Dr. Applebaum also didn't originate from Israel?
You might guess that correctly. He was also an American. But he said he can do it better. And so he opened Israel's first private urgent care center. When I came to Israel in 1990, they were just opening up the first center here in Jerusalem. And the reason that I didn't continue on my whirlwind trip, actually, was because I sat with David, and we hit it off, and I became what's called a Ben Bite by him. He basically adopted me.
Wow.
And we worked together in Jerusalem in the clinic that today sees over 150,000 people a year in just that one clinic. Today, there are 15 Terem clinics throughout the country, and they'll see almost 750,000 people a year in those 15 clinics. And that's all from what David Applebaum started in 1988 to 1989.
Sounds like a special man.
He was extremely special. He was very special. He taught me, I like to say, that in my residency program, I learned how to take care of illnesses. Mm-hmm. If somebody comes with a heart attack, you have to know how to take care of them. If somebody comes with a stroke. But David taught me how to take care of people. He taught me how to care for the patients.
That's a healthy.
Yeah.
And if we're talking about the people and the patients, what kind of people and patients come into Terem?
Well, Terem sees patients wherever Terem may be. If we're talking about Terem in Tel Aviv or Terem in Carmiel, Terem in Nahariya, you see patients who have medical problems, some of them acute, some of them less acute, mm-hmm. but who need to be seen by a doctor, maybe need a test or two, and 93% of them go home. Only 7% of all those hundreds of thousands of people that Terem see every year are actually sent to the hospital.
So they screen and do the first round before the hospital needs to.
Correct. And the hospitals, all the hospitals in Israel, are very overcrowded and very overworked. And if you just think for a moment, if just a small fraction of the people that we send home from Terem were to come to the hospitals, it would push the system over the limit. Because you're talking about so many people. Some of those people with chest pain, some of those people with infections that don't need to be hospitalized, don't need their treatment and their testing to be done in the hospitals, but can be done in the community. If just a significant number of those were to come to the hospitals, it would push us over.
Completely. Yeah, having sat in the emergency clinic of Rambam in Haifa, it's already at the edge.
Yeah.
And so in Carmiel, for example, where I live, there tend to be either Jewish patients or Arab patients or Druze patients, and likewise the doctors. in Jerusalem, the variety of the population here must make for an interesting work environment, interesting experiences, I imagine.
Well, I think working in medicine in Israel, no matter where you are, is an interesting experience. It's a very dynamic country, but certainly to be in Jerusalem is a very special privilege, but it's also a very unique situation because, one, as you say, the different cultures of the patients that come and see us. I would say it's probably 70% Jewish and 30% non-Jewish. Mm-hmm. And then when you break down the Jewish population, you have the ultra-Orthodox, you have the modern religious, you have the non-religious. In the non-Jewish populations, you have Muslims and Christians. And then when you put on top of that, the tourists that come from all over the world.
Oh, wow, yeah.
You have people literally from all over the world coming every day to Jerusalem. And so when you mix all of these things together, it's a very special environment. One of the things that people frequently ask me about, and one of the interesting mixes, if you will, is what happens in a terrorist attack. There are three hospitals in the city of Jerusalem. We are the largest hospital of the three. We're also the only hospital in the center of town.
Right.
So no matter where the terrorist attack happens, probably we're going to be the closest institution, medical institution. And so we've always averaged between 40 and 50% of the casualties coming to us. An interesting mix I would define as taking care of somebody who's been injured in a terrorist attack when laying in the bed next to him is the terrorist.
Whoa.
Just to make it a little bit more interesting, you have staff that are Jewish. We have people on our staff who have personally suffered or somebody in their family has suffered in a terrorist attack. You also have people on the medical staff in the hospital who have first-degree relatives who have perpetrated terrorist attacks.
Whoa. And so presumably there's a very clear protocol as to how the staff handles those kind of situations?
Well, basically the first step is that we leave it all at the door. You don't bring any of the politics into the hospital. Politics in Israel, as you can imagine, is a very sensitive topic. Even amongst ourselves, if you just take a group of Jewish people and you start to talk politics, you're going to have very fierce differences of opinion. And I would imagine that the same would happen in the Muslim community. Politics have nothing to do with it. The fact that I'm a settler by definition, because I live over the green line, doesn't come into play. Nobody asks, doesn't come up in conversations during work time or in the workplace. People have posted things on their Facebook pages that I would not be very proud of. But again, you know that it's posted there. You see it when you go into Facebook, but you leave it all at the door. It doesn't enter into the building.
Is that not difficult?
It's extremely difficult.
So it does enter the building, it just doesn't come out of your mouths?
It's under the surface, but you can't let it affect the way you relate to other people or the way you relate to patients. Part of our job in the emergency department is to take care of patients that come. And part of the population that comes, I don't know how much you know Jerusalem, but not too far from the hospital, there's a major highway.
Okay.
And if you go north on that highway for about 20 minutes, you're going to get to a prison where they hold terrorists. And it's the easiest thing for them to get on that highway and bring people to me. So we frequently take care of terrorists, and they come with policemen or soldiers to guard them and to guard us. But part of our job, day in and day out, is to take care of them as physicians, as nurses. And what they did to get to the place where they're at now is not part of the conversation.
And have there been any stories, anything that you could tell us of where the differences between patients or between workers here have actually influenced things for the better, where there's been something enjoyable or harmonious about the
First
differences?
First of all, I was anticipating you to ask exactly the opposite, so I'm very happy that you asked for the positive and not for the negative.
We'll get the negative later.
I'll give you an example. I had a resident who was a young gentleman who was an Arab, and he posted some things on his Facebook page that were not what I would expect from a physician. And it made the news in Israel.
generally, what do you mean? What you would not expect from a physician?
Talking about how the Israeli soldiers are baby killers and the blood is dripping from the hands of the prime minister. And and so that physician had a conversation with the head of the hospital, and he was not fired. He was allowed to continue with his residency. And I would say probably about a year and a half ago, we had a police officer, I believe, who was stabbed in the back, in the upper back. Turns out, actually, that the knife penetrated the back, went through the lung, and into the heart. And when this patient came to the emergency department, he was not stable. His blood pressure was low. His heart rate was fast. And we do a quick exam. It's called a FAST exam because it's quick, but it's FAST is short for focused abdominal sonography and trauma. And part of the exam is to look at the heart with an ultrasound machine.
Okay.
So this young Arab gentleman was doing the FAST, and he identified the fact that there was a problem in the heart, and he announced it very loudly, and that enabled the thoracic surgeon to know exactly what was happening and to save the policeman's life. So that is an example of how, even though there may be some tension with this young man after what he put on his Facebook page, he, as we all do, we put it to the side and we don't let it influence how we act or how we take care of our patients.
And the patients themselves? Has it ever happened where the patient has woken up next to the perpetrator?
No, I don't think the patients understand that when they're laying in the trauma bays, they're first of all divided. The trauma bays are not open to everybody. There's a division between the different bays. So they don't know who's laying in the bay next to them. There is a story. There was a young Arab boy who came in with a broken leg, and he was laying in a bed in the orthopedic emergency department. And laying next to him was a gentleman who had come many years before from one of the Arab countries. He was Jewish, and he had come to Israel in the 1950s after the state was declared, and he had made Aliyah. So he spoke fluent Arabic.
Mm-hmm.
So this was in the days before the orthopedists were giving sedation and pain control. Today we're much more sensitive to people's pain than what we used to be. So the orthopedist came and he set this child's broken leg with not giving him enough pain control. So the patient, the child was in a lot of pain. And apparently what I'm told is that the mother was telling the child the whole time in Arabic, "Don't worry, someday we'll get the Jews back. We'll get back at the Jews. We'll get back at the Jews. We'll get back at the Jews." And the gentleman who was laying in the bed next to this child understood exactly what the mother was saying and went ballistic. That obviously is not where we are today. That was many, many years ago. And today, I think the only story that I've heard in recent years is that there were patients waiting to have a CT scan done, and the terrorist was brought from the trauma bays to CT to have a CT done on his body to determine what his injuries were. And the patients who were waiting in CT were upset that he went ahead of them. That's the only story that I've heard in recent years. And basically they explained to the patients that the decision who goes first is based upon their medical status and their situation and their stability, and not whether they're Arabs or Jews.
Or more deserving or less.
More deserving or less deserving.
Mm. Yeah. And the ultra-Orthodox population of Jerusalem, does that present additional challenges to medical work, or is it just not an issue?
No, there are. There are certain cultural issues that come with treating the ultra-Orthodox. First of all, I have to say that the communities in Jerusalem, whether they're Muslim or Jewish, it doesn't really matter. Everybody's very sensitive to modesty. So we try very hard to take that into account. Our emergency department is the busiest emergency department in the city. We're very overcrowded. We see a lot of patients in the hallways. But despite that, we try very hard to preserve people's modesty. So that's very important culturally to all the cultures in Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm.
But when you talk about the ultra-Orthodox community, there's one thing that always pops into my mind, and that is that sometimes they are more hesitant to receive treatment until they check with their rabbi. So I remember many times I've had people who I thought had a pressing problem. For instance, last time this happened to me, it was a gentleman who had a certain kind of heart arrhythmia. And he had a heart rate that was very fast. It was going about 130 beats a minute. And I wanted to give him treatment for it. He was a gentleman who was probably in his 60s. It was like a stress test. So for me, I wanted to try and slow that down, that heart rate, sooner as opposed to later, because for a 60-year-old gentleman, having a stress test, that could be a dangerous thing.
Right.
But he wouldn't let me give him any medicine until he checked with his rabbi. And that took a couple hours, by the way, until he found his rabbi, until he could talk to his rabbi, until his rabbi decided that it was okay for me to treat him. That was a process that took over 2 hours. So that's part of the culture. That's part of what we have to take into account to take care of our patients.
Wow. And here we are coming up to Yom Yerushalayim. Is there anything that you would wish for Jerusalem, or wish for Sha'arei Tzedek, or wish for Terem?
What I would wish for Jerusalem is peace. I think we want peace between ourselves, and we want peace with our neighbors.
Sounds good enough.
Goodbye, Washington, and come and visit us.
Todd Zealot, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Later that night, I made my way to Jerusalem's central bus station in order to meet with another person inspired by Dr. Applebaum. Diala Dana works at the first terem Applebaum established in Jerusalem, in the Romema area close by the entrance to Jerusalem. And as I walked up behind the central bus station towards the midnight quiet of Yirmiyahu Street, I started thinking about this city of dichotomies. Yerushalayim, literally the city of peace, home to so much conflict. A united city that speaks in two different languages, Hebrew and Arabic. And of course, the mythical dichotomy, Yerushalayim Shel Ma'ala and Yerushalayim Shel Mata, the higher Jerusalem and the lower Jerusalem, Jerusalem of the spirit and Jerusalem of the day-to-day. Wherever you look in Jewish tradition, it feels like Jerusalem has always been split in two, yearning for unity. The poet Yehuda Amichai notices that even the name Jerusalem, Yerushalayim, is actually plural. The Hebrew suffix ayim always signals a pair. Regel is one leg, raglayim is two. Yad is a hand, but yadayim is two. So why Yerushalayim? Lama Yerushalayim tamid shtayim? Why is Jerusalem always two, shel ma'ala v'shel mata, of above and below? Ani rotze lechiot b'Yerushalayim shel emtza. I want to live in Jerusalem of in between. Bli lachvot et roshi l'ma'ala, without hitting my head above, uvli liftzoa et raglai l'mata, and without injuring my foot below. V'lam Yerushalayim b'lashon zugit, k'mo yadayim v'raglayim. And why is Jerusalem a pair, like hands and legs? Ani rotze lichyot rak b'Yerushal, echad. I just want to live in one Jerusal. Kani rak ani echad, v'lo shnayim. Because I'm only one, I, and not two. So from these spiritual, lyrical ponderings, I walked into the very concrete, immediate surroundings of Terem Emergency Clinic in Romema. It's midnight, and there are at least 20 people hanging around in the waiting hall. Men, women, Arabs, Jews, ultra-Orthodox and secular, all either in need of care or waiting for someone being treated. This is definitely Yerushalayim Shel Mata, Jerusalem of below. Diala comes out to greet me and we sit down in a vacant back room. So Diala Dana.
Yeah.
Thank you for giving us a bit of time. I understand you're about to get to work in a minute.
Yeah, you're welcome anytime.
Is it all right that we speak in English?
Yes, I guess.
Do you speak other languages apart from English?
Arabic, Romanian, Hebrew, and English.
Okay, I guess that's enough. And how do all these languages come to you?
My mom is Romanian. My father is Arabic. Hebrew at work. I learned Hebrew at Terem. I didn't know a word before I worked.
And you started working here? And
I started working without Hebrew.
And so did you only work with Arabic-speaking patients?
And English. The staff was talking to me in English, and then Hebrew, and then I started talking as well.
Okay. And did you not have the opportunity to learn Hebrew anywhere else?
I was at a private school, so we learned German, English, and Arabic.
The school was where?
It's in Jerusalem, Shaar Shechem, Ishmitz Girls College.
Okay. And so tell me, is it by chance that we meet you here at Terim, or do you have any particular connection to this place?
So I was technically born here. My father is a doctor since the first day of Terim. David Applebaum, the one who made Terim, was a good friend of my father, and he was my doctor.
And David Applebaum, can you tell us a little bit more about him?
He's a very, very, very good person. He was, sorry. He started Terem for the Haredim in Romema.
Uh-huh.
So Arabic doctors will treat them in Shabbat.
Oh, I see.
Yeah.
So like it was a deliberate way of basically getting the best out of everybody.
Exactly.
And so Arabic doctors, this was a deliberate thing that Arabic...
For Shishi Shabbat, for Friday and Saturday, for Shabbat.
I see. And that was how he met your father?
Yeah. They were together in Mada, Magen David Adam.
Mm-hmm.
And then they started together here.
How wonderful. So tell me about this place. Jerusalem is a kind of a complicated place.
Yeah, it is. With all the people.
Does the complication play out here?
Sometimes, yeah. Sometimes. Before we didn't feel this. But now, after all the problems, we feel it. We feel the problem between Arabic people and Jewish, but not in work. At work, we're like a family. But with the patients, yeah, we can feel it. We can feel the races sometimes.
Can you give me an example of anything that's happened or that's made you feel that way?
Nothing comes to my mind now, but we feel it. We feel it from the patient when they don't get what they want, so they start with Arabic doctors, staff, and everyone.
And within the team, that's the same, or?
No, we're like a family, the team. About 50% of the staff is Arabic. The other 50 is Jewish, so we got used to work together. We got used not to talk about politics. We got used to be a family. So we don't talk about politics, we don't feel any problems here. It depends.
When do you think that things started, I guess, going sour?
After the problems 3 years ago, when the war started, it's kind of war in Gaza and in Jerusalem.
Uh-huh.
So then it started, all the problems.
That there were terrorist attacks?
Yeah, exactly.
And do Arab-Palestinian patients come in here?
Yeah.
And do they get upset with the Jewish doctors?
No, not at all. Here in Jerusalem, the Arabic people, the Palestinian, like me, we are fine with it. We work with Jewish people. We eat with Jewish people. We learn with Jewish people. We do everything, practically. The other side, the Palestinian side, the other side is the problem, not here in Jerusalem.
You're gesturing as in over in the West Bank, is that what you mean?
Yeah, in the West Bank.
Not in Jerusalem.
Exactly.
I see. And does that also fit with the Eastern Jerusalem? Does that count as Jerusalem or on the other side?
Yeah, it does count as Jerusalem. I live in Eastern Jerusalem.
So would you say then, as we're coming up to Yom Yerushalayim, Jerusalem is in one sense one city, a unified city, or is it two kind of different cities, do you reckon?
For me, it's one city. It's one. It can't be split. Can't be split. It's the Holy Land. Muslims, Christians, and Jewish people. So it can't be split. That's why they call it the Holy Land.
After we turned off the recording equipment, Dial explained to me that she wasn't used to talking about what she called politics. All the staff at Terim, Jews and Arabs, are like a family. But it's a family that doesn't talk politics. For good and for bad, as Diala puts it. Terim carries with it a terrible inner wound. A wound that seems to underlie and even undermine everything that they do in Jerusalem. Because while Terim has been able to save many, many victims of terror, it was not able to save its founder, David Applebaum. Applebaum was murdered in a terror attack in 2003, together with his daughter, on the night before her wedding. And yet, of course, Terim keeps going, constantly working to heal this unified yet divided city. Lately, the tensions have shifted to another side of town, near a different Terim at the promenade overlooking Jerusalem from its east. The promenade is very close by my offices at Makom and serves the Jewish area of Arnona and its Arab neighbours in Jabal Mukaber. Recently, more and more knife attackers and road attackers have started to emerge from Jabal Mukaber. Indeed, the driver of the truck that rammed into a crowd of young Israeli soldiers was from Jabal Mukaber, and he rammed into them, I guess, about 5 minutes' walk from my office. I managed to track down Dr. Dov Goldstein, who works and lives near there. Dov and I had been due to meet at the Terim at the promenade, but his wife Elisheva gave birth a couple of days early. So I caught him, exhausted, on Skype.
It was about noon, 1 p.m. My wife and children, well, that's weird to say, live on Derech Hevron, which is a main street not far from where the Tehillot was, not far from where one of the main Terim branches is. And I was taking care of some things around the house before my shift, and I heard sirens. Didn't think much of it because sirens come all the time. And then about a half hour later, I get a call from the head of the branch. Listen, there's been this attack, and some of your colleagues have run to the scene to see if they could help. Can you come and cover in the clinic? I did. And if there was any sign of business as usual and life goes on, it was that people were frustrated that they had to wait in line, no matter what.
There was no acknowledgement that no one was there because they were kind of busy with an awful terror attack just 50 yards down the road.
There's some acknowledgement, not enough. About 15, 20 minutes later, two of my colleagues, one a senior nurse and physician assistant, and then another doctor who had been to the scene, came back, clearly shaken, but just trying to get back to work. Within about the next hour, and it's all blur. Within the next hour, another friend of mine who is a nurse from Jabal Mukaber, which is a neighborhood, on the one hand, 5 minutes from our home, on the other hand, a world away.
And Jabal Mukaber is the place from which set off the truck, which plowed into the young soldiers.
So in this case, yeah, that was the case. Reports were coming that the assailant was from Jabal Mukaber. But this friend of mine who, we never talk politics, but we have the warmest of relationships. We share, you know, snacks every Saturday night. I usually work the Saturday night shift and have a little tradition with my mostly Arab colleagues who have been working all day Saturday to bring whatever leftovers we have, namely desserts, to bring there. It's also really helpful for my own diet. He knows my daughter, Roni, by her first name, always asks about her. But this day, he came up to each of us, who happened to be three Jewish doctors on the shift, came up to each of us individually, shook our hands, and apologized with empathy in his voice, saying, I'm so sorry that this has have to happen. This happened. This is crazy. It's got to stop. This guy was nuts. He's not one of us. He apparently had ties to ISIS. And kept on saying things on that end, but his empathy was there and it was real. And for me, it was, I don't know if heartwarming is the right word, reassuring, maybe a more appropriate word, to know that that voice for moderation exists even in a neighborhood that has been such a hotbed for much of the violence in the last year and a half. And I felt, I guess, honored that I was one of the people who was able to hear it firsthand. And just to add another bookend to that, I speak to you now, and when this goes to air, my wife and I just had a little baby boy. And as it just so happened, the nurse who went around shaking people's hands, showing empathy for the attack, he got married the day that my son was born. And if you look at the Tarim WhatsApp feed that day from the Tarim Jerusalem staff, there are Mazal Tovs and Mabruks going around from staffers, Jewish and Arab alike, to both of us.
If ever one wanted a story about the unification of Jerusalem, it would be through Tarim WhatsApp messages, wishing congratulations to very different people coming from very different places in the same city.
And yet when I hugged him late Saturday night, because I wasn't going to see him before his wedding and kind of had a sense that this baby was on its way, we didn't feel all that different. Just two friends sharing in each other's good news. You know, Ramadan coming up, is that one of the senior doctors wrote what's called the Ramadan Protocol, teaching about how to administer medicine in a way that doesn't break the fast. There was one Friday afternoon, it happened that there were these three Orthodox Jewish doctors who had spent time in Yeshivot learning Talmud, and we were poring over these protocols, analyzing it, like over-analyzing and reading into it like only a bunch of Talmud students turned doctors can.
And it's with this image of the Jew and the Muslim, the victims and the attackers, bound through healing, that Greater Washington Jewish Federation wishes Israel's capital city, Jerusalem, a Chag Sameach, a happy holiday. May this eternally unified city know peace, swiftly, and in our days. With special thanks to Elisheva Kupferman, whose idea this podcast was, and who helped with the production of this episode of Imagine Israel. And thank you for listening. This podcast, part of the Imagine Israel initiative, is brought to you by the Jewish Federation of Greater Washington and hosted and produced by me, Robbie Greengrass of Macomb. You can find us on shalomdc.org/ImagineIsraelPodcast.